para ir a un psicólogo. Señor, ¿yo me conviene? Thank you, move closer. Okay, last week we covered up to chapter 18, verse number 34. And we are now going through the concept of free willpower. And in verse 33, this willpower also willpower also makes us do the wrong things. So in verse number 33, Krishna spoke about sattvic willpower. Sattvic willpower is that where a person has full control of his mind, of his senses, of his body, so he is able to lead a very disciplined life. Thus, using willpower to lead a disciplined life is called sattvic willpower. In verse 34, Krishna described rajasic people, they also have willpower, but they use the willpower to cling on to wealth, to pleasures, to satisfy all their desires. So they also have dhriti, the word used is dhriti or willpower, but used for the wrong purposes, to cling on to wrong things. And then, what about tamasic willpower? Tamasic willpower is in today's verse, we will discuss from verse 35. Here Krishna says, yaya. Yaya means that effort, whatever effort a person puts in, using the willpower, na vimunchati. Now vimunchati means does not give up. He uses his willpower and does not give up. What? Hangs on to the wrong misconceptions. A tamasic person generally has a very lopsided view about life. He has a totally misconstrued concept about life. If you realize in verse 32, in this chapter, when Krishna talked about tamasic intellect, he said, what is a tamasic intellect? That which is enveloped in darkness, that intellect which is covered in darkness, means which is in ignorance, and wrongly accepts what is wrong, it thinks it is right, and what is right, it thinks it is wrong. That is a totally lopsided view of the whole world. And because a tamasic person has got a couldn't care less attitude, couldn't care less attitude, such a person will not seek any knowledge or advice from the scriptures or from gurus or from elders. Thus, this tamasic person will never change his way of thinking. So, what are the five qualities that a tamasic person wrongly uses? Uses the willpower and has five qualities which he clings on to. What are the five qualities? The first he gives here in verse 35, svapnam. Svapnam here means sleep. Constant daydreaming and constant night dreaming also. Right. So these are the people who are always building castles in the air, what they call building castles in the air. There are many plans, there are many ideas. But what is the problem? They don't do anything about it. So they can constantly dream about a lot of things, but they don't do anything. Or either they start something and then halfway they lose their enthusiasm. They don't have that drive. And why do they have, they don't have that drive? Because most of the time they just want to rest and relax. So the willpower is used not to do work. The willpower is used to how to rest and relax. Always looking for opportunities to escape duties and responsibilities. So even a tamasic person is very clever. They are very clever how to give a lot of excuses why this work cannot be done, why that cannot be done. Because all the time they just want to avoid the work. Second is bhayam. Bhayam, you can understand, is fear. Fear of what? What are tamasic people have fear about what? What can a tamasic mind have fear? Fear of losing. Fear of failure, you can say. They always are afraid of failure. Failure. Fear of failure. Fear of what will others say if I do this, what will people say. So they are always filled with negative thoughts. And due to this fear that they will never succeed, they don't want to take up any activity. So these are the people who lack self-confidence. They fear for everything. If I do this, what will happen? If I do that, what will happen? So, out of fear, they have no confidence in themselves. Bhayam. Third quality, shokam. Shokam, which is sorrow. Sorrow means what? Sorrow means these are the people who are always complaining and crying about everything in life. Everything they will find something negative to cry about, to complain about. And they never appreciate whatever blessings they have in life. They're always crying and complaining about the past, complaining about the future. That is and they hold on to this. Constantly they open their mouth, they're only complaining about their past or complaining about their future or their present life. Fourth quality, visadam. Arjuna, chapter 1, what is it called? Arjuna Vishada Yoga, in the state of despondency. Despondency means lack of motivation. They lose their motivation. They don't want to put in any effort at all. And why is this? Why do tamasic people don't want to, they lack motivation? Because they accept their fate. They say everything in life is already programmed already, is already destined already. Whatever I do also, nothing is going to change. So what is the point of putting in any effort? They accept their faith and they don't want to put in any effort at all.
Well, some people say they talk about everything because everything is decided by the karma.
Right. Right.
So I can't change it.
Yeah, I can't change anything. So why put in anything?
They don't talk about the future.
They don't talk about the free will, exactly. So they forget that free will also plays a part in our life. We have been given in human form this capacity of free will. If we don't exercise it, then we have wasted this whole gift of free will. So whatever it is, we have to put in effort. Whether we can overcome the matter or not, that is a different thing. But we have to put in the effort. That's why you remember the important verse in chapter 2, verse 47. Karman eva adhikaraste. Your adhikar, your right is to what? Action. You must do your duty and responsibility. You don't worry about the result. Whatever the result will come as a result of the law of karma or whatever other factors, but that does not mean you don't do your duty. So you must be constantly guided by this chapter 2 verse 47 and never neglect doing our responsibilities. So visadam. Fifth quality is madam. Madam here means they are eager to enjoy all types of pleasures. any type of pressure, they come to find out, they want to jump in and enjoy. They don't think about the consequences. You know, when there was a trend some time back, people were taking to blue sleeping. You heard about that. Just to get intoxicated, they cannot afford alcohol or drugs. So somebody came out with the concept of sleeping glue. You all know about that, right? Don't practice it, I'm not asking you to practice it. But glue sniffing increases, it gives you a high, but there's so many toxic poisons going into your body. But these tamasic people, they don't think about all that. They just want instant satisfaction. So madhur means they are always chasing after pleasures which are harmful to them, and not only harmful to them, but it also harms other people who are around them also. Like example, taking drugs, smoking also. When you exhale smoke also, you affect the people around you also. So these people are prone to madham, meaning all kinds of pleasures which are harmful to them and harmful to others also. But they are not bothered about the side effects of all these pleasures. So Krishna has got a very very harsh word for these kind of people who cling on to the wrong concept about life, who cling on to all these negative qualities of swapnam, shokam, visadam. He calls them durmeda. In the third line you see the word durmeda. Durmeda means they are incapable of discrimination. They don't use this. It's not that the tamasic people don't have an intellect. They have the intellect. But they are incapable of using the intellect. Durmeda. And what is therefore, what is right, what is wrong, there is utter confusion in their minds. There is utter confusion. And therefore, such people, Krishna says, actually durmeda means no different than animals. Because animals also don't have the intellect. Animals don't know what is right, what is wrong. If they feel hungry, they will attack and kill. They don't understand if it is wrong to take a life. But a human being equipped with the intellect should at least know the difference between right and wrong. So durmeda. And therefore Krishna says, saha driti, such a kind of driti or willpower is what? Tamasik. It is known as a tamasik willpower. That uses the willpower to hang on to all the wrong things that causes a person's destruction. So now with the three types of driti, Krishna has completed how many topics? Total five topics. Jnanam, knowledge, karma, action, karta, the doer, buddhi, which is the intellect, and now finally driti, which is willpower. Five topics have been covered, and he has divided all into sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. So therefore, if we want to be on the spiritual path, when it comes to these five aspects, which one should we choose? Which one should we work for? Sattvic, rajasic or tamasic? Sattvic type. Sattvic type in all the five, we should try. So this way is also a guideline for us to analyze ourselves. Is our knowledge, is our action, what type of people are we? Are we sattvic, rajasic or tamasic? We can use this to analyze and slowly change our way of life also. Therefore, if we are positive to be on the spiritual path, we must have sattvic jnanam, do sattvic karma, be a sattvic karta and have sattvic buddhi and driti also. And if we have all these five aspects, sattvic type, what is the end result? Krishna says will be sukham, that happiness you will get, sukham. But if you have rajasic happiness, rajasic action, the sukham will be of rajasic type. If you have tamasic buddhi, you have the tamasic sukham also. So whatever you put in is what is the end result. First, in verse 36, Krishna says now that happiness of sukham is also of three types, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. Because why? Actions also are three types, therefore happiness also will be of three types also. So here Krishna says, may you listen, idanim, now. And he addresses Arjuna with the word Bharata Sabha. Bharata Sabha means scion of the Bharata dynasty. So scion means descendant of a Bharata, which is a very noble, a very notable family. Arjuna was a descendant of that Bharata dynasty. And why does he want to tell him this? Why does he want to address him as Bharata Sabha? As I told you, every address of Krishna to Arjuna and vice versa, there is a meaning why it is used in that particular verse. And here in this verse, Krishna chooses to address Arjuna as Bharata Sabha. What is the, which means descendant of a noble Bharata family. What is the purpose of Krishna addressing Arjuna that? That means telling him, you come from a noble family, you possess noble qualities, so surely your actions, your knowledge will be sattvic and you will get a sattvic happiness also. Thus here he tells him in verse number 36, Trividam Sukham. Trividam Sukham means three types of sukham are there. May you listen to me. That for all human beings you have a choice. This is not for you, it is not for animals. Animals cannot have sattvic, rajasic or tamasic sukham. They only have one type of sukham. Whereas humans have a possibility to enjoy three different types of sukham. And it all depends on our action also. So what is the this sukham? He says yatra, in which ramate means one who takes delights. Abhyasa means practice. So whatever the type of practice we keep on doing, that is the end result of that sukham. Example, if we constantly smoke a cigarette, and by smoking the cigarette it becomes a habit, abhyasa, we take delight in that smoking a cigarette until it becomes a habit, then what is the end result? What type of sukham do we get? Definitely not a very pleasant sukham, right? So what is your action? Action becomes a, you perform the action, you get delight in it, you find happiness in it, but out of that practice, there is a different type of sukham that is the end result, right? So, same thing, like if we have good habits, we like to go and listen to bhajans, we like to go and listen to spiritual talks, we like to go to temples, out of that habit, we enjoy it, what is that ultimate sukham that we get? This is what he wants to say. Until it all becomes a habit, then only we will enjoy that sukham also. So he says, all these three types of action, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, why do we undertake, why does this, you see, all the three people, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic, they are also performing actions. What is the one common factor by which everybody performs action? What is that one common factor? What type of results? Why do all of us, why do you go to a restaurant to eat good food?
Everybody wants to spend
a sukham. So what is the opposite of sukham? Dukham. So actions are done to remove dukham. Everybody does action to remove dukkham. If I am not happy with something, I will do an action to remove my dukkham. So here he says, these three type of actions, the word he uses, dukkha antam. Dukkha means sorrow, antam means end of sorrow. Actions are performed by sattvic, rajasic, tamasic people, all for one purpose only. They are only, nobody does anybody do action to gain sorrow. Everybody does action to remove sorrow. And what is it that person gets, sattvic, rajasic or tamasic? By doing the actions, also to remove sorrow, but yet Krishna says, "Let I will tell you what is the end result of that action."
Okay.
Action is probably,
the other way, action is not because of
a desire. Yeah, but the desire is what always? To remove something that you are not happy with. Example, if you are feeling hungry, to remove that hunger, you perform an action. If you are feeling thirsty, to remove that feeling of thirst, you drink something. So every action is inspired to remove something from your life. You are not happy with your present house? Change your house, right? Not happy with present car? You do action to change the car. Means you are removing the cause of your unhappiness, the cause of your sorrow. But what happens when you try to do that? That is what Krishna wants to say. So when he first talks about sattvic sukham in verse number 37, what is sattvic sukham? So sattvic sukham, we must understand, one must be very patient to enjoy this sattvic sukham. You must be committed, because to enjoy this sattvic sukham takes a lot of effort also. So when we gain sukham, from instantly when we gain sukham, supposing from name, fame, wealth, relationships, it can come, it can go. It is temporary, it is fleeting. But what is sattvic sukham, Krishna wants to say, is infinite sukham. Once you attain it, it will never go away. So what is sattvic sukham? He says, yat agre. Yat means that sukham, agre, which is in the beginning, whatever action you do, that action in the beginning, visham eva. Eva means it's like visham, like poison. Now, what does poison mean here? What do you mean by poison? Huh? Unpleasant, which causes you pain, which causes, there are a lot of obstacles you have to overcome, sacrifices you have to do, disciplines you have to put in your life. That's why all those type of actions which cause you a lot of trouble, which cause you a lot of discipline, require you to put in a lot of effort, commitment. And because why? Why? Especially like spiritual practices, why in the beginning they look like poison? When we decide to change our life and try to go towards the spiritual path, we find it's very difficult. Coming for Gita class, easy or difficult? Why is it when we decide to change, why does it look difficult? Whereas when you want to take to pleasures, it sounds, it's very easy. Why is that? True, you don't see the result. Yes, that's one reason. You don't get an instant result. Number two?
Sacrifice something. Sacrifice pleasure, time.
Yes, you have to sacrifice. But what is the main thing that we find is so difficult? It's not easy to go on a spiritual path.
Give up something.
The mind that has been so enjoying rajasic and tamasic, now you are trying to turn that mind into sattvic direction. So first of all, you have to wipe away all that dirt in your mind first. Right? So that negativity which you have been accumulating over so many lifetimes, even in this lifetime, the day you decide to change, you want to condition that mind can become very, very stubborn. Right? And Arjuna asked Krishna also in chapter 6, the mind is as difficult to control as the wind. It is obstinate. It is very powerful. It is so difficult. You are sitting here in the class, trying to listen, but then your mind can be running all over the world. It's so difficult to bring that mind. Why? Because of the past habitual practices also. In fact, there was a very interesting story. I was reading one of these books, one of the Swamiji wrote, to give an example of the mind. He went trekking in the Himalayas and he came across these porters. They help, because when you go trekking up the mountains, there are a lot of things you have to carry. Clothes, you have to carry food, provisions, water, etc. So for human beings to carry this is very difficult. Already we have to climb up the hill and all. So what they did is they used donkeys. But when you take the load and you put it on a donkey, the donkey also is very stubborn. He doesn't want to carry that load on his back. So what he does, he kicks his legs and the load falls off. Again the caretakers put the load on the donkey, again he kicks, again fall off. So 4 or 5 times they do that, the donkey refuses to carry any load on his back. So what is the trick they came up with? They tie the front leg of the donkey to the back leg of the donkey with a rope. Then they put the load on the donkey. The minute he kicks his back leg, what happens? Pulls the front leg, what happens to the face of the donkey? Falls down, he hits the ground. So he gets pain. So they do it the second time again. They tie his leg again, they put the load. Second time he kicks, again he falls, he hits his head. Third time, fourth time the donkey is so scared to kick up his legs. Then you put the load. So what does it tell us? What does it tell us? Similarly, our mind is like this. The first time you try to condition it, it rebels. Second time you condition, rebel. But you carry on conditioning the mind until it slowly follows. There is a saying, persistence overcomes resistance. Right? Persistence overcomes resistance. Whatever there is a resistance, only can be overcome by persistence. That's why the two key that Krishna gives to Arjuna to control the mind is abhyasa, practice, practice, practice. There is no other way to control your mind. And vairagya, vairagya is detach. So one is attached, one is detached. Attach your mind to good habits, detach from bad habits. Constantly keep on practicing this also. So such is the nature of the mind. If it is left on its own, it will look for quick gratification. But to wean our mind away in the beginning, it looks like poison. But Krishna says, however, parinami, in the end, in due course, if you are disciplined, if you are consistent, if you are dedicated on the spiritual path, if you are persistent, you can overcome this obstacle of the mind, overcome all the bad habits. So he says, parinami, in the end, in due course, the result is amritopamam. It is, amrit means nectar. It is like nectar. The happiness that you get, the bliss that you get, is like nectar. And you can recall the very famous Puranic story. When the Devas and the Asuras were churning the ocean, in the churning of the ocean, what they wanted was amrit. But the last thing to come out was the amrit. And before the amrit came out, so many wondrous and mystical products came out from the churning of the ocean. What happened to the Asuras? They saw all these wonderful things, they grabbed onto them and ran away. But the Devas carried on churning. They did not get distracted by all these wonderful things that came on. And they waited until the amrit came. So to get that happiness which is like nectar, we have to put in a lot of effort. We have to make a lot of sacrifice. There must be discipline. But here Krishna is assuring us that in the beginning it is very difficult. But be persistent. Do not give up. In the end it will be like amrit. And why is it like amrit? Why is it like amrit? He says here, prasada, the prasadam, he uses the word prasadam. Prasadam means the joy or the happiness. Prasada jam means it is born out of. Where does this happiness come from? He says this prasada or this happiness is born out of atma buddhi. Atma Buddhi means when you go, Atma here does not mean the soul here. It means self-knowledge. Atma Buddhi means self-knowledge. It means that when you try to discipline yourself and you end up being a master of your mind, when the mind is calm, when the mind is in your control, ultimately you will be able to attain the self-knowledge. And with that self-knowledge, you will attain the ultimate goal of life, which is moksha. So the purpose of putting discipline in our action is to attain a control of the mind. With the control of the mind, we will be able to receive and absorb and retain this knowledge, Atma Buddhi. And therefore, we will reach the ultimate goal, which is called moksha. So we have to understand, right knowledge leads to what? Right knowledge leads, if you have the right knowledge, what will it lead to?
Right thinking
will lead to right action. If you have wrong knowledge, wrong thinking will lead to wrong actions. So it is a very vicious circle. We have to first correct that with the right knowledge. In order to get right knowledge, we have to put in a lot of discipline, a lot of effort, a lot of sacrifice. And what is the clarity we get from knowledge? When we have that clarity in our mind, when the clarity comes to us, we understand a very important thing, that the world does not have the capacity to give me permanent happiness. When that clarity occurs to us, then we don't waste our time chasing after all these worldly things. If I understand the world, not to say the world cannot give me happiness, I know the world can only give me temporary happiness. When that clarity awakens in us, then we don't waste our time chasing after all these material and sensual pleasures. So as you remember that very famous verse, chapter 9, verse 33, Anityam Asukam Lokam, Krishna said, this loka is anityam and it is asukam. There are two qualities in this world. When we talk about world, we mean people, objects and situations. Everything falls under anityam and asukam. Asukam means, sukam is happiness, asukam means sorrow. And it is not that the world is full of sorrow. It means that, what does it mean? When he says the world is asukam, you say, how can you say world is asukam? I am happy.
It's an opposite.
It's a?
Opposite. You're happy, you will become sad.
That's true. But here what it means is, the world is the cause of your sorrows. Then you say, how can the world be cause of my sorrows? How can the world be a cause? It's not that the world is full of sorrow, the world is a cause of your sorrows.
Because you are attached to it.
Okay, then how does it become a cause of your sorrows?
Because you don't understand the nature of the world.
The world is temporary and transient. So, your happiness also will be.
Anything that gives you happiness upon its arrival will give you sorrow upon its departure. So anything that you get happiness from the world, understand that by its coming gives you sorrow, by its departure gives you, by its coming gives you happiness, by its departure gives you sorrow. And anything by its coming gives you sorrow, by its departure gives you happiness. So in the end, the world is nothing but a cause of your sorrow, because we are chasing the world for happiness and that same happiness eventually leads to sorrow. That's why he says, the other quality of the world is anityam. Nityam means permanent. Anityam means temporary. Therefore, since everything in the world is temporary, how can your happiness be permanent? So the world is a cause of your sorrow.
It's called arrival and departure.
Exactly. Anityam means everything comes and has to go. Whatever comes in the life has to go also, whatever it is. So, Anityam Asukam, such kind of happiness, Krishna says, which looks like poison in the beginning. That's why he says Visham Eva. It's not like it is poison, it looks like, it feels like poison. But in the end, it's like Amrit. He says that sukham, tat sukham, roktam, is said to be sattvikam. So anything that you put in effort, which seems like so difficult, carry on, be disciplined, ultimately you will get the Amrit there also. And there is a beautiful line in the Chandogya Upanishad, a very beautiful verse. Yo vai bhuma tat sukham na alpe sukham asti. Yo vai bhuma, bhuma means which is absolute, which is full, which is purnam, that is sukham. Na alpe sukham asti, in anything else which is not full, there is no happiness in that. So Upanishads are very clear where you should look for that sukham. Okay? And if you say you are experiencing any sukham from the world, then the Upanishads say it is like a dream. Because in a dream you conjure up your own happiness. And when that dream goes away, when you wake up, where is that happiness? It does not exist, it only exists in your dream. So in order to explain that sukham that comes from the world, don't be fooled by it. It is a very, it is not infinite, it is a finite bliss. Now, how do you attain this absolute happiness also? Initially on the spiritual path, how do we try to, because to bring this mind, to discipline this monkey mind is not very easy. So in chapter 8 verse 7, Krishna gave one very, what we call, very interesting line there. Chapter 8 verse 7, Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Mam anusmara, smaran means to think, anusmaran means to constantly think. Of who? Mam, God. So God says, think of me, Mam anusmara, yudhyacha, while you are fighting, while you are doing all your duties and responsibilities, fix your mind on me. But not just once or 1 second or 2 seconds. What he says? Anusmara, which means what? Constantly. Now, how can you constantly fix your mind on the Lord? You say, I got so many things to think about, appointments here, I got this work to do, that work, so many things. How can, Lord, you expect me to anusmara, to constantly think about it? But he has given us a key there. How do you constantly fix your mind on God?
Think of your duties as service to God.
Correct. That means, wherever your mind runs, see God there. It is not that you can't think of your duties, but whatever you think of, supposing you're cooking, who are you cooking for? Think of the Lord. If you are, whatever work you're doing, whatever responsibilities, if you're taking care of your parents, who do you see in your parents? See the Lord in your parents. So, wherever your mind runs, see the Lord there. That's how you can constantly keep on fixing your mind on the Lord. And there your actions become an offering to the Lord also. You can say in a way it's a yajna, true, but whatever we have to, wherever our mind runs, we see the presence of God there. And thus all our actions become an offering to the Lord.
It is also good, brother, because then whatever is not right, you will not do it.
Correct. So that's true. Correct. Whatever you feel, I mean, as long as you
see
God,
God in something that is evil.
Right. You're right. Then you will be careful about doing anything wrong also. Right. So here, think constantly means wherever your mind runs, see the presence of God. Now, verse, the next verse here, he talks about verse number 38. He speaks about rajasic happiness. What is rajasic happiness? Now both sattvic sukham and rajasic sukham require committed activity. There's no difference in the effort. Both put in effort. But sattvic actions lead to spiritual progress, whereas rajasic actions lead to material progress. So sattvic actions lead to absolute bliss, rajasic sukham leads, actions lead to temporary bliss. And why is that? Because why is the rajasic mind or rajasic action that leads to temporary bliss? Is because A rajasic mind is never happy with whatever he gets. So whatever he gets, there's always some other desire or some other thing that is driving him. And sattvic sukham is based on knowledge. So it is not just it is an intelligent understanding of the world. I withdraw from the world with an intelligent knowledge that the world cannot provide me eternal happiness. Then you may ask the question, why should we engage ourselves in the world? If you say the world cannot provide me happiness, why not I just run away, sit in the mountains then, or in a cave? The world is a place for us to discharge our responsibilities and our duties. So we should not run away. Look upon the world as a place to discharge your duties and responsibilities, but don't find security, happiness and comfort in the world, because it doesn't exist. So you're looking for happiness in the wrong place. It is like you go to a clothing shop, sells clothes, and you tell them, can you sell me Panadol? You're going to the wrong place to get what you want. So you should understand very clearly where real happiness lies. But rajasic sukham, what is that? Rajasic sukham, he says here, tat sukham, that bliss, that joy, which arises out of what? Samyoga. Rajasic sukham is that happiness that you get, which arises out of samyoga. Yeah, samyoga means contact. Contact of what? Vishaya. Vishaya means the objects, which are the objects around us. Objects again here can mean people, can mean possessions also. Okay. So, contact of the objects with what? Indriya, with our senses. So, any happiness that arises out of contact of your senses with the objects, he says, upon contact you get happiness, right? And how do the senses contact the world? The eyes contact through form or shape. The ears contact through sound. The tongue contacts the world through taste, nose through smell, and skin through touch. So any of these five senses, as they are contacting the world and there is some kind of pleasant experience, okay, from this contact, what is the nature of this, he's saying? He's saying, although the experience will bring you some anandam or some pleasure, but he says, agre, in the beginning, amritopamam, it is like nectar. So anything that we see with our eyes that gives us happiness, with our ears, any music we hear that gives us happiness, in the beginning, agre, amritopamam, it is like nectar. It gives us anandam. And he says, however, pariname, at the end, it becomes visham, which is poison. And again, why is that? Because everything that we contact that brings us happiness through our contact of senses with objects is always temporary. It never is long lasting. So such kind of contact with the world that gives you pleasure, it's always pleasurable in the beginning, but it's like poison. Why? Because that object or that person is never permanent, it's always temporary. So it is happiness in the beginning, but poison in the end also. And also an example is given in certain texts also to explain why this happiness is never long lasting. The example is given of a pot with water, and when you put a fire below the pot and the water starts boiling, so now the water is boiling, and thus if you want to cool down the water, what you do is you take a pot of cold water and you pour it into this pot of boiling water. What happens to the boiling water now? It becomes cool again. But because the fire is burning below, what happens to the water again? It boils again. So what is the allegory? The allegory is, as long as our mind is full of desires, The fire represents our desires. The water, it heats up the water, it drives us to action. When we are driven to action, temporarily, it's like putting cold water into this hot water. Temporarily, we are happy. Supposing we desire to own a car. We work hard, the desire is driving us to own an expensive car. We work hard. The minute we get the car, what happens to us? We are happy. Right? Initially, we were not happy because we didn't have the car. But when we got the car, then we become happy. But what happens now? The fire is still burning. So the mind gets disturbed again. Then you want something else again. Then the water starts boiling and you start another action. So it is said in our scriptures that there are three defects to chasing after desires. While we are chasing after desires, are we happy or not happy? We have not got it yet. Are we happy or not happy?
Unhappy.
So while we are working towards that, we are not happy. When we attain that, are we happy or not happy? Then temporary happy. Then you become unhappy again. So while chasing after it, you are not happy. After you get it, also not happy. And the third time is when you actually lose that what you have attained, then also you become unhappy. So in chasing also unhappiness, in getting also unhappiness, in trying to maintain that, because once you got something, you have to maintain that also. There also is a lot of unhappiness. And finally, ultimately, when you lose it, there is also unhappiness. So Rajasic people keep on chasing after this. And that's what they're saying is, man is the slave of desires. Man is the slave of desires, but desires are the slave of no one. Desires don't answer to anybody. But man is the one who chases after all these desires.
So you should contact the world intelligently.
Intelligently. Understand that as long as we understand that these are all temporary, one day they are there, one day they will go away. So I should not rely upon that. It does not mean I run away from the world, I enjoy the world with an intelligent mind.
But we still chase after them.
You can chase after them as long as you understand one day it goes away, I don't get disappointed. So with that understanding, we can enjoy everything. Today it will be there, tomorrow it might not be there. With that understanding, we have no issue with the world. Don't expect permanence from the impermanence. Don't expect permanence from the temporary. It is our wrong thinking that we expect permanent from the impermanent. That we expect permanent from the temporary. It is not logical at all. The what?
The Chinese
hungry
ghost.
What is hungry
ghost? Hungry ghost is Chinese. Chinese.
Oh, hungry ghost. Okay, hungry ghost. Okay, right.
They satisfy everything out of the
They pray to them to obtain something, right? Yeah. So all these are basically rajasic kind of desires. So, tat spritam, that kind of happiness which gives you amrit in the beginning and poison in the end, he says that is Rajasic Sukham. So what is Sattvic Ananda? Sattvic Ananda is derived by practicing Vairagya. On the contrary, it is not Ananda by having more. It is Ananda by having less. By more detachment, we are still happy. That is Sattvic Ananda. Intelligent withdrawal from the world of objects. But Rajasic is chasing and chasing and chasing after more and more. That's why it is said that the sattvic mind also works from inner happiness. But a rajasic mind works for external happiness. That is the difference. A sattvic mind works from inner happiness. Already the happiness is there, the joy is there. You carry on doing your work. You are not dependent on the external situation. But a rajasic mind is always dependent on the external happiness. That is the difference. Now description of Tamasic Sukham in verse number 39. What is Tamasic Sukham? Tamasic Sukham is neither born out of knowledge, because a Tamasic person has no knowledge, so there is no Vairagyam, nor is it born out of contact of senses with the world, because a Tamasic person does not want to put in any effort at all towards spiritual goal or material goals. tamasic sukham is based on one philosophy. What is that philosophy? Ignorance is bliss. I don't want to know, I don't care to know. I am in the state of bliss. So not putting in any effort. So here Krishna says, what is tamasic sukham? Tat sukham, that bliss, which arises from what? Nidra, sleep. The person enjoys the most bliss from sleeping. Nidra. And alasya. Alasya is laziness. Thus, avoiding duties, avoiding responsibilities, that person enjoys the bliss through sleeping and through laziness. Third, bliss that is enjoyed through pramada. Pramada means negligence, indifference, inattentive. He is not interested to know or change his habit or change his thinking. Okay? So pramada through negligence. And such kind of happiness, the greatest gift we have is our intellect. That's right, for human beings, the greatest gift we have is the intellect. The capacity to choose between right and wrong. But this person is constantly in a state of mohanam. The word mohanam here means in a state of delusion. Who is deluded? Mohanam atmanaha. Atmanaha means yourself. You delude yourself. That happiness that deludes you. Meaning what? The intellect becomes more and more and more weaker and weaker and weaker. Instead of leading a life with your intellect, the intellect becomes more and more and more weaker. In fact, at a point when the intellect will start to justify your actions. Initially, maybe you feel that doing this is wrong. I'm avoiding my duties, I'm avoiding my responsibility. But it gives you happiness. You do it once. You do it twice. You do it thrice. Finally, what happens to the voice of your intellect? It starts to justify. It says, no, you are doing correct. Don't worry, you are correct. So it is a very twisted intellect. It justifies your actions. So what does Krishna say? Agre, in the beginning, and Anubandhe, right up to the end, from the beginning of your life till the end of your life, you live in a life of total delusion, in a life of total denial, and your happiness comes from nothing but sleep, ignorance and negligence. So a human life that is totally wasted, where happiness is derived out of ignorance, derived out of negligence, and derived out of sleep. A total waste of human life. There is no way to change the life. And you can only hope that some past punyam will fructify in this life and give you a change. That hopefully you meet the right person, a right guru, or some incident happens in your life that makes you wake up and want to change your life. So Krishna says that type of happiness which is derived from sleep, from negligence, from avoiding duties and all that, he says such a sukham is tamasic sukham. Right? And therefore this tells us what type of sukham. Whenever we are going on the spiritual path, right path, we meet obstacles, we find it difficult, we find it challenging, understand that you are on the right path. So initially there is resistance, but you have to keep on being persistent. Now Krishna concludes this discussion in verse number 40 with a very important point here. To tell us that everything in this world is prakriti, is matter. Okay? And what is important to note, this whole creation is made up of prakriti, matter. Prakriti means the five elements. Okay? Mind, intellect, ego. These eight components that make up prakriti, that make up this whole creation. And very important to note that in this creation, in this prakriti, there are the three gunas. Sattvic, Rajasic and Tamasic. So no doubt, the whole creation is made up of the same elements. You, I, everybody is made up of the five elements plus mind, intellect, ego. Yet, we all look different, we behave different, We think different, we act different because of the composition of these three gunas. That is what makes the difference in us, the modification. So these, where do these three gunas exist? Even on earth they exist. In the Swarga Loka also they exist. In the Pata Loka also the three gunas exist. Nobody can escape these three gunas in all the 14 lokas. The 14 lokas.
In different lokas we don't experience the karmic debt.
Correct. We don't experience the karmic debt, but the gunas exist that drive our actions. But whatever actions you do in Swarga Loka, there is no residual, what you call, karma phalam. There is no, we don't experience the results of our action. So that means the devas can do good in Swarga Loka, they don't get extra punyam. At the same time, the devas can do a lot of naughty things also, driven by their rajasic gunas, they don't get any punishment. Similarly, the asuras in Pata Loka, they can be as vicious and mean as they want, but they don't get any extra papam. But they suffer because of their ass actions.
Is it right? Sounds wrong.
Sorry?
Because the devas do right things.
Yes.
Still come as human beings.
Correct. So what is the philosophy here? Earth is called Karma Bhumi. Whereas Pata Loka and Swarga Loka is called Bhoga Bhumi. You can only go and spend your karmas. You cannot accumulate. So even if the Asura does anything good in Pata Loka, he doesn't get any punya. That's why these two, that's why if we are spiritual inclined people, we should not aspire for Swarga Loka because it's a waste of time. I go there just to exhaust my karmas and I come back here. This Bhuloka is your only opportunity to bypass the Swarga Loka and merge with God. So we should not waste this opportunity in Bhuloka, but instead foolish people pray for what? Pray for Swarga Loka, not understanding that they have to come back again. You see? So there is no point in attaining Swarga Loka also. So the gunas are there in all the lokas also, all the 14 lokas. If you're a tamasic person, it is very unlikely that you'll go to Swarga Loka. Very unlikely. Because why? The actions that you do will be based on your tamasic guna. So definitely.
No,
only downstairs.
No, brother, recently I went for a funeral. I noticed the priest keep saying, sort of they say things, you go to Shurukala.
Yeah. You only pray, la, because if you tell you go to Pata Loka, family will chase
you. You are not praying for them to go to Moksha or.
Yeah, in fact, it was strange. I also attended one funeral recently, and a person was from a spiritual organization, I won't name where. And he gave a short talk. He said, may we pray that his brother goes to Swarga Loka. So why are you praying for him to go to Swarga Loka? You should pray for him on the contrary to be one with God. But then this is what they think. Swarga Loka means, you know, means moksha. Swarga Loka is not moksha. That's what chapter 9 has told us. So all these gunas affect us in all the lokas also. And now this is what Krishna wants to conclude the discussion here. He says in verse 40, Natat asti, there is no such sattvam. Here the word sattva means anything which is sentient or insentient. Okay, the sattvam does not mean sattva guna. So natat asti, there is no such thing, sattvam, which means which is moving or not moving. That means it tells us that the three gunas are also in rocks, in trees, everywhere the three gunas are there. Not only in moving things, but also in non-moving things also. Prithivam. Prithivam means in the world. Okay? So, the three gunas, he says, There is no such thing moving or non-moving in the world. Punaha, again, he says, Deveshu. Deveshu means among the gods. Okay, where? Divi, in the heaven. Okay, which is muktam, which is free or devoid of what? Tridhi gune. There is nothing in these lokas which, whether it is moving or not moving, which can ever be free, muktaha, of these three gunas. So as long as these three gunas are there, means we are constantly rotating in these 14 lokas also. Okay? And where do these gunas come from? Prakriti jai. Prakriti jai means they are born of prakriti. Means wherever there is prakriti, the three gunas are there. And where is prakriti? It is everywhere in the 14 lokas. It is in your body, it is in the whole creation. Prakriti is everywhere. So it exists everywhere. Therefore, the three gunas exist in prakriti. Nothing moving or non-moving can ever be free of these three gunas. The only difference is what? The mixture of the three gunas, the proportion of the three gunas. So now, what he wants to say is, therefore, since the whole creation is a product of prakriti, and another word used for this prakriti is also maya. Maya, because it deludes us. This whole world is also a delusion also. So, until we free ourselves from these three gunas, then only we can attain moksha. That is the most important thing to answer. So therefore, since the three gunas are in us, what is the reason that Krishna is saying this? In the next few verses, he is going to explain that is why humanity has been divided into four castes. The caste system has come about because of the gunas. And many of us don't understand the caste system. That's why many people ridicule the caste system. They criticize the caste system. But when we are going to discuss the next few verses, we must understand the beauty about the caste system. The difference of the caste system which is being practiced now is called Jati Dharma, which is based on your family lineage or birth. Yes. So if you are born in a Brahmana family, you become a Brahmana by way of birth. But here he is going to tell us that that does not determine your caste. Your caste is determined by your own gunas. So even if you are born in a Brahmana family, but if your guna is tamasic, you cannot be called a Brahmana. So why this caste system is there based on the gunas? So that following our gunas, we take up the right profession or the right action. And once we do that, we follow our gunas and take up the right action, ultimately we will purify ourselves. So the idea of the caste system is to do the right action to purify ourselves.
So it was slotting them more or less according to their attitude.
Right, according to their inherent attitude, which is derived out of our predominant gunas. So if you have predominant sattvic guna, you are called one type of caste. Predominant rajasic guna, different caste. And understand, no caste is a low caste. There is no such thing as a inferior or low caste. All the castes are equal because all have a right, their own functions to perform. Right? In fact, in the Vedas also it's mentioned that the Brahmanas come from the head of Bhagwan. The Kshatriyas come from the arms of Bhagwan, the Vaishyas come from the stomach of Bhagwan, and the Shudras come from the feet or the leg of Bhagwan. So everything is pure, everything is pious. The whole body, you need your hand to function, you need your legs to function, you need your head to function. When everything in your body functions in the organized way, there is progress in life. When these four caste systems follow their program order, there is what we call harmony in life. There's harmony in the creation. So here Krishna wants to say nobody can escape the gunas. All of us have the gunas. We must understand therefore these gunas and act accordingly from the gunas also. So this fourfold caste system, which is now explained starting from verse 41, which Krishna also already explained in chapter 4 also. is based on our own individual gunas and is not governed by which family lineage we are born. Okay? So in accordance with our nature, every individual must take up the appropriate duties and responsibilities. See, in verse 45, he concludes the discussion of the four caste system. See what he says? Each man devoted to his own duty attains the highest perfection. You follow your gunas, do your duty according to your gunas, you can attain the highest perfection. So the reason for the division of the four caste system is very important to understand. What is a sattvic predominant person who has minimum rajasic or tamasic gunas? If you have predominant sattvic gunas and very little rajasic or tamasic gunas, you fall into a brahmana category. So your caste becomes brahmana. What it means basically is that you have an aptitude for attaining knowledge and you should use that aptitude for sharing or giving knowledge. So what type of profession, if you enjoy receiving knowledge, you enjoy learning knowledge, you should therefore go into a profession of teaching knowledge or sharing your knowledge. Then you are called a brahmana. And if you have predominant rajasic gunas in you, backed by sattva and little tamas, then you are classified as a kshatriya. Which means that your aptitude is protecting society. You serve in law and order, you serve in administration, such people are called what we call kshatriyas. Okay? And if you have rajasic gunas backed by tamasic and very little sattva, then you are called a vaishya, a business person. So you should take up what you call commerce, trading, business, etc. Okay? And so notice the difference between kshatriya and vaishya. Both are rajasic dominant. But what is the difference? Kshatriya has rajasic dominance, vaishya has rajasic dominance. So what's the difference? So where does the difference come from? The kshatriya has rajasic dominant gunas but backed by sattva, very little tamas. Whereas the vaishya has majority rajasic guna but backed by tamas and very little sattva. So the vaishya is basically one who does business but more for his own personal gain. Whereas the kshatriya who is in politics, who is in administration, law and order, does service but backed by sattva, which means he wants to serve the people, so serve society. Tamasic predominant person who has majority tamas backed by rajas and very little sattva is categorized as a shudra, who is suitable for manual work. So all the four are therefore categorized by their gunas. So the gunas are not to categorize, the four caste system is not to categorize animals also, plants. But in a way you can say that plants have majority tamasic gunas. Hardly they will have any sattvic or rajasic gunas in them. So that's why they are dormant, they don't move. Animals also have predominant, either sattvic, predominant sattvic gunas are like elephants, deer, which are very, docile in nature, right? They are very soft mannered, herbivores, whereas tigers and lions, etc., will have predominant rajasic gunas. So, again, the category can be seen through also the behavior of animals also. And according to the gunas, we should therefore take up our work functions, our duties and our responsibilities. And note that this guna system which divides the four castes is sanctioned by the scriptures, not the system which is now accepted in India, which is not sanctioned by the scriptures, which was a division given, I believe, by the Britishers to divide and rule. So there you have low caste people, there's no such thing as low caste. Right, so we must understand this very clearly.
Brother, but the gunas give you the
inclination. Right.
But you still have your free will to.
Correct, of course you have your. That's why, even if you're born, let's say, you are a Shudra, okay, and you're born in a family of the Brahmanas, you have your free will to change yourself. You see or not? Therefore, it gives us the freedom to move. It doesn't mean a Shudra remains a Shudra for the rest of his life. Or a Brahmana, if he has predominant Sattvic Gunas, he can also fall down to a Shudra also. So there is free will to move also in the caste system. Whereas the present caste system is, if you are born in a Shudra family, you die a Shudra. Even if you have, you are an intelligent person, you have knowledge, you always be considered a Shudra. So here it gives us the free will to move to whatever we want to move. We have the free will to move. It does not mean that you are born in that you must, you know. If there is a stronger urge in you to change, you can also change also. That's why the word low caste, I don't know from where it has come from. If you see here.
This perception, even we say president is low caste. Our perception is low caste.
But where is it mentioned here that there is a low caste? There are only four: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. There are only four. There is no low caste so called classification here. Sorry?
Shudra
they used to call low caste because they said. Because why? These people were the ones who were in the. They used to clean all the toilets and all that. And they used to be involved in the leather industry. So they said that kind of thing, Brahmanas and all shouldn't be called Shudras. But this is a misconception. And you can see there is no such thing as low caste in our division here. So we will look at each individual duty, what is the duty of a Brahmana, what is the duty of Kshatriya, etc. in the next few verses, Krishna will discuss also.
Do these
gunas determine your swabhava? Yes, exactly. Your swabhava is a product of your gunas. See, the gunas will determine your nature, how you think, how you speak, how you act, what are your interests, what type of activities you like and don't like. All this is determined by our gunas also. But again, there is free will, not to say we cannot change. We can change. Okay. So, in the next few verses, we will see what are the individual duties. And we take up the duties following our gunas, then we are going on the right path itself. We will attain inner purification. So what are the four castes here? Krishna says the fourfold classification: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishyas and Sudras. Karmani, all the duties of these four castes, the duties, are Vibhaktani. Vibhaktani means they are very well classified, they are very well divided. Okay? Four types of activities to serve the entire creation. And what determines who is a Brahmana, a Kshatriya? He says the four classes are classified by Svabhava, by your own nature, by your own inclination. And where does this Svabhava come from? Prabhave Gune. Prabhave means it is born or governed by the Gunas. So the Gunas will cause your Svabhava. What is your nature? What is, just like they say, you tell me what books you like to read, I can tell what's your nature. You tell me which places you like to go to, I can tell what's your nature. You tell me what type of friends you like, I can tell what's your nature. So your nature is governed by your Gunas and it expresses in your actions, in your behavior, in your words, in the places you go to, in the type of books you like to read, in the type of activities you like. From that you can analyze what is your nature, right? So it is born out of the gunas, okay? And again, these all come from our past lives. So it is like a circle. Gunas cause our actions. Our actions strengthen the gunas. The gunas again cause our action. It is like a total circle. using our free will, if we change our actions, then only our gunas also changes. So we are a product of the gunas, but we are not a slave of the gunas. We must understand that. Gunas influence our action, but we can change our gunas. Otherwise, a tamasic person will remain tamasic for his whole life. A rajasic person will remain rajasic for his whole life. So, now he tells about the duties starting from verse 42. The duties of a brahmana. Verse 43 will be duties of a kshatriya. And verse 44 will be duties of vaishya and sudra. Now these duties, you must understand, are those which were given thousands of years back. It does not mean that if he says vaishya is supposed to rear cows and all this, doesn't mean now your vaishya also rear cows. Basically what it means is you are in the field of business, doing agriculture, doing trading, etc. Right? So in modern day context also we can identify. Who is the modern day brahmana? Your teachers, your lecturers, your scientists, your professors. Who is the modern day kshatriya?
Police,
navy, politicians, soldiers. These are your modern day kshatriyas. Who is your modern day vaishya? The business people running all the trade, commerce, etc. Right? Running supermarkets and all so forth. And who is your modern day shudra? Your delivery boy, your driver, your maid, etc. Okay. So we can easily connect this to the four class systems here. Okay. Yes.
Can you be a mix?
How?
Like you do medicine, you become a doctor, but then you open up your own hospital.
Yeah, fine. But what is your purpose? See, what is your purpose? When you do medicine, your idea is to serve the public or to serve yourself. So if you are serving yourself, then the doctor becomes a vaishya, right? But if he opens up a hospital to serve the public, then he becomes a, what you call, a kshatriya, right? So again, the motive also is driving our what you call, our profession. We can also fall into a kshatriya, we can also fall into a vaishya also, depending what you do. So when we come back next week, then we will take up, there's no class. And then we will resume on the first Saturday of September. Okay? And glad to announce that we already have 53 people signed up for the seminar. We wanted 50, but we ended up 53. And that will be next week, 8:30 to 12:30. End with a prayer. Vasudeva Sutam Devam कंस चानूरमर्दनम् देवकी परमानंदम् कृष्णं वंदे जगद्गुरु।